You know, my name is Prashant Kumar, and I'm from My Realty Gains. A lot of you know me on Facebook or here and there, but my formal introduction is, you know, I am an IT professional. I've been in corporate America for about 25 years, but for the last 5 years, I've been doing real estate on the side, and I am a real estate syndicator now, even though, I have not done a syndication deal myself. I have been part of GP groups. I did 1,200 units last year. I have done single family portfolios. I own myself 100 units. In addition to that, I have, as I said, 1,200 units, which we did last year, and in GP capacity, like taking care of the whole deal. So, and we have done JVs in past ourselves. I'm just about ready to do syndication myself, and we are doing these lives events to, in the interest of sharing knowledge with the group. And today I have my great friend Kishan Singh, whom I know for last couple of years. I would ask you to put yourself on mute if you are not talking. And you know, I know Kishan Singh for last couple of years, a great gentleman. There are no words. I mean, there are no words which are enough to talk about him. But I will still tell, you know, the group what he has. He's a Microsoft certified engineer, but he's turned into successful entrepreneur and multi-business owner. He owns multiple gas stations, convenience stores, laundromats, and he had 40 single family portfolio in North Indiana, but now he has sold that portfolio. He has about 20, actually 2,700 units in LP and GP capacity. So he's also a syndicator, and he wants to do syndication himself, and he can talk about that himself. And he spends a lot of time helping the community of investors, budding syndicators. So he has been a beacon of light for all of us. And I mean, whenever I have a question, I just call him all the time, and he never says no to any, you know, if I take half an hour, 1 hour, 1.5 hours, he would always help us as much as he can. He owns various agriculture, commercial, and residential properties in India also. I mean, we can talk about it all day long about him. But having said that, you know, he has the biggest, you know, investors group on Facebook. Sort of a lot of people know about him. So I called him today to talk about passive real estate investing. And I'm sure today's presentation would be very fruitful for everybody. I would let Kishan Singh ji take over from here and share his experience in real estate and in about passive investing specifically. Kishan Singh ji, all yours.
Hello. Thank you, Prashant. Thank you very much for the good words. And thank you, everyone else who took time to come to our meetup here today and took time out of your precious time. So, my name is Kishan Singh, and normally I am known by KK Singh. And that's kind of my American name, short name. And easy to pronounce as well. So I am a CEO and founder of Grow Rich Capital, which is our multifamily investment company. And I have other 26 companies, but most of them own real estate of the gas stations, laundromats, and I have been in the gas station business for 20 years. In 2015, we bought a portfolio of 40 single family houses here in Fort Wayne area, Fort Wayne, Indiana area. And I sold it last month. We closed on May 6th. So since then, since I have been in the in the real estate space, I have been investing passively as well. In other people's syndications over these years. I also coach students on multifamily. And I own 205,074 units as a LP and a GP. Last year, I started being a partner, equity partner on three deals and in different parts of the nation. And I have all these kind of experiences that I'm trying to utilize to educate other people as well as for myself. So guys, today I'm going to be talking about passive investment. And for the last several years, about a decade, this has been very hard topic, hard asset to do investments in this field, real estate, and especially in the multifamily. And including me, a lot of people do not still know how to invest. Over these years, there has not been much education to educate the passive investors. It's only been the syndicators educating. And when the syndicators, though I am a syndicator, Prashant is a syndicator too, but I want to be very honest and fair to the investors as well, since I'm an investor myself. So it's the only way of being educated, and a lot of syndicators have not opened up the things that they need to open up in front of the investors. And there is this PPM is like 100 pages legal language, and a lot of investors don't have enough time to read all those papers and understand also. And it's not even viable to take it to an attorney and spend thousands of dollars just them to read, because the syndicators are not going to change a word in it. So I have been trying over these years to educate investors, whether they are my investors, whether they are Prashant's investors, and or anybody's investors. And I don't even care if you invest with me or not, ever invest, but I want you to learn what you need to look at a deal. You just don't look at a deal and invest your hard-earned money in the wrong deal. So I realized, not the hard way, but I started realizing after my first investment that I need to learn. So in my first deal, I thought, okay, let's invest in multifamily, and this guy has a deal, so let's invest. So I invested $50,000 of my hard-earned money in a deal with an investor I had never met, never visited the property, and I just gave him a check. So thank God, I still get paid my preferred return, and he became my friend after that, and even my son is working for him now. But it was just, I did it by chance. I didn't do my research, I didn't do my due diligence. And soon after that, I realized after investing that money that I need to be more careful with my money. I need to learn more. So I started learning back in 2015 about the multifamily, and kept learning. And even today, after about 5 years, now I'm coaching. And I also try to share my knowledge with other people on the on my Facebook group, which is 10X Multifamily Investment Group. And we have about 5,000 members in that group, and a lot of good people share their knowledge every day with the newbies, and newbies also share their experiences and their experience. So over these years, talking to syndicators, talking to investors, talking to other people in the field, I have prepared a list of questions that investors should be asking before writing a check. So I'm going to share that information with you today. So as I said, these questions are, even if you are trying to get on somebody else's deal, you would need the same questions. You would need the same questions to ask the syndicator. So it's for active as well as passive investors. So first, the most important question is the track record of the experience of the sponsors. you want, as an investor on somebody else's deal, you want to know who are the sponsors. How long have they been doing these deals personally, not by raising money or finding the deal and selling to, you want to know if they have enough experience, they have turned around one deal, or they, at least they have bought and sold any of those deals. So you want to know how many deals they have done and their company as well. So it could be me and Prashant. Prashant might have done, I might not have done any deals so far. So, but at least you want somebody experienced in the company who has gone through the life cycle of the multifamily. So what next is, what happens if there is one sponsor and something happens to him? You never know. So who are you going to contact if it's just a individual sponsor? Or he gets incapacitated, so he's unable to perform the duties of a syndicator. So who is going to be responsible? So those are important things. The next question you should be asking, if there are multiple people, they are okay to check their background. So since you are finding them either or through the networking or on the live events like this, or meeting them somewhere or through a friend, you don't know who they are, what they have done in the past. So you want to make sure they have a good, clean background. So always, and a lot of times I have seen when you ask this question, you don't have to check their record, because they are reluctant on doing that. So anytime if somebody is reluctant on getting their background check or giving you the information to check their background, that's something scary. A lot of times they'll say, yes, go ahead. This is my social security number. This is my full name, and what else you need? So they have confidence because they are good at that. So they know they have a clean background. They won't be a problem. So you want also to know who are, because there are several people in the deal. So I may be raising the money, Prashant may be just raising the money for the deal, but I may not be the actual sponsor on the deal. So you want to know who is the actual sponsors on the deal and who controls the deal. And that person should have experience. So you want to make sure that the actual sponsor, so if I'm raising money and I have experience, but I'm not going to control this deal, it could be a good deal, but if some newbie is going to control and I'm just as a KP or equity partner, and a lot of people approach us too, to raise money for them or sign their loan. And I have raised the money, but I haven't signed the loan for somebody yet, but I could be signing the loan, but that doesn't mean I'll be controlling the deal, and I will be doing the asset management and also executing the business plan on the deal. So you want to make sure that the sponsor who is the actual sponsor who controls the deal has experience, not the other people who just signed the loan and got his pie and he's out of there. So now is the next one is the business plan. What is the exact target market of those sponsor, and what is their criteria? What is their criteria of buying the deal? So do they buy C properties? Do they buy D properties? Or do they buy value add or stabilize? Those things need to be known. And a lot of, you will get an OM offering of memorandum from the syndicator, but they always want to show you what they want. They don't want to show you everything. They want to show you only the things they want you to see. And I can give you an example about, let's say they want to show you that the median income of that particular town or city is not that much as compared to the county. So let's say Fort Wayne, And Fort Wayne may not have that much income because now there are people around living in Fort Wayne, not their address is not Fort Wayne, they're of the Allen County. So they will put Allen County's median income, not Fort Wayne City's median income. So they are not going to lie to you on the OM, but they have ways to turn around things that they don't want you to see. They want you to want the marketing deck to look nice. So, and the next question you should be asking is their capitalization policy. Who's going to be signing the loan? Who's going to be doing the construction management? Who's going to be doing the asset management? Who's going to be controlling the capital? And who needs to sign the check, one person or two person, or how much amount they can allow the property management to write down, so write a check for. So will they be performing cost segregation on the property? Because this is a great benefit. A lot of people, and including me, just invest in these deals because we want to take the benefit of the cost segregation. And sometimes you are buying a property in January, you don't just remember to ask that whether they're going to be doing this year or next year or in 2 years, 3 years. So you want to check that upfront, whether they're going to, when are they going to be doing cost segregation, and most of them will, and when they are doing, so that you can plan your taxes accordingly. So how do you plan to mitigate the business interest limitations of the deal?
So there is a question, what is there any preferred resource to check for doing the background check?
Oh, there are several websites. You can do background check. I have never checked. I didn't have a chance to check because I make relationship with networking before. So, but I always ask this question. I always ask them this question, and I can give you one website, but I think there are a lot of websites where you can.
There are a lot of websites, and I will look for it and maybe respond back. I have done some background checks for doing some business with other partners.
And I also have seen a lot of websites they to do, but I have never done, honestly. I do with my employees. I ask them to bring their own report from the police. So they bring their own reports. So I don't have to go out and do the check on them. Then the multifamily team. So there is always a team. It's not one or two person that manages the whole deal. So then you need to know, as an investor, you need to know who's going to be the property manager and their experience. You can go online and do research on them too. So let's say the sponsor tells me that we have first properties, just for example. So you can do your own research as well. And a lot of times they'll say they have 4,000 properties under their belt and all that kind of stuff, but you can go on their website and check for yourself. Normally, if it's a really good company, they'll definitely put it as a team in the OM2, but if they don't have much experience, they might not. Again, the asset manager, who's going to be managing the assets? So who's going to be executing the business plan? And does he or she have the experience of, if they are doing construction management? Will the property management be doing the construction management, or will the asset manager be taking care of that construction management? So whether they have experience, then the bookkeepers, accountants, CPAs, and law firms, real estate, and guys, SEC attorney is different from a real estate attorney. not all the, I mean, there are firms where they have SEC attorneys as well as real estate attorneys, but normally those are two different people. So you may have one for the real estate to do your real estate stuff, to do the closing, etc. Then that you have to have a, if you're doing a syndication, then you have to have a SEC, Securities Exchange Commission attorney, to write down your PPM and your power attorney, etc. So you need to know that as well. And you can see if they have experience, they have done some PPMs before. And I suggest you always, always, if not take it to the attorney, just read, take time. You're spending your hard earned money. Just take time. So guys, I was talking about the PPM, and I'm going to talk further things that are hidden in the PPM, or these days, those PPMs are scary. Believe me, those PPMs are scary. Those operating agreements are scary. And there are a lot of syndicators, I'm not going to say everyone, a lot of syndicators are playing games with those, which not even an expert investor would know. And Prashant can verify that too.
That is correct. Yep. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people are writing language to protect their personal interest quite a bit in the PPM. I mean, that's the purpose of PPM, but they overwrite that language, which, I mean, as an investor would make me feel very scared, you know, uncomfortable. But even then, investors, you know, they sign up for the PPM because they know that, you know, because we have a personal relationship, they still end up signing them up.
But make sure to read it yourself. I would highly suggest to read it yourself. You don't take it to the attorney unless, I mean, you can clarify a lot of that stuff with the syndicator itself, and I can give you one example of it. And I will give you example when I get there in a minute. But there are so many things, and that you can just print that PPM, take it, and then highlight and get back with the syndicator and ask those questions. And they're not going to lie to you. They're not going to lie to you, but they're going to try to hide that. And you can even verify those things with the attorney as well. So you don't have to have the attorney go through all the 100 pages. You can take some notes and clarify those notes first with the syndicator. And then if you want to spend some money, do also get your attorney's advice on that as well. Next is the investor relations. So who are the, you need to know who are their typical investors. So do they have retail investors? That means you, me, and Prashant, and every one of us here putting 50,000 or 100,000, or do they have family offices, or do they have some big investors? You want to know, because the reason why you want to know, because those big investors or family offices or some bigger groups, they're going to have better terms than you would get as a retail investor. So make sure that you get the same terms as well. So when you ask them that if you have any, what type of investor you have, and let's say he says, oh, I have KK and he's got $1 million in the deal, you can always ask, what terms does he get? And if you don't ask, he's not going to tell you that what terms he gets. So you can verify those things. And if he has institutional, let's say it's a bigger project, he might have institutional investors in the deal, and they will have a lot more control over the sponsor than anyone of us would have those kind of controls, or they may not have voting rights, or they may have voting rights, but they'll have a lot more control over the deal than sometimes even the sponsor. So you might want to check those and verify those questions. And also, you can ask the syndicator about their other investors and also about your previous investors and the previous deals. Get some names. I mean, I'm sure they're going to give you those favorite names, but you can still ask them questions, talk to them, how long they have been invested, are they getting their preferred return on time, what kind of communication. So that means before you invest your money, you would know that they're giving you quarterly reports, they're giving you access to financial, they're giving to access to a lot of things, or they're not giving you anything at all. Are they paying preferred returns on time, and how they're paying you preferred return, whether they're sending a check, online payment. You can ask so many questions, even if they are their favorite ones. And I'm sure syndicators will give their favorite ones reference, but you can still ask them so many questions that they'll have to answer. And also, you can know a lot about their communication and investor relationship before you invest with any one of them. So also, what kind of communication they have? Do you get an access to their cell phone? Can you text them and get answer? Can you call them anytime? Can you get a lot of times they have like assistance. You never get to a syndicator. You always get an answer from the assistant. So you need to check those things, whether you have an access directly to the syndicator or you're going to be talking to the assistant, and then the assistant is going to check with the syndicator and then get back with an answer to you. So you may want to check those things up front. Now you want to ask some questions about the property. And as I said, you will get an OM, and the syndicator wants to put it, they want to paint a rosy picture. So they may not tell you everything about the property. Excuse me. So you need to ask them, why do they like the property? And also, if they had got the appraisal done, whether the appraisal is equal to the price, the purchase price, or over the purchase price, and if less than the purchase price, definitely they will not tell you. If it's $1 million over, they will put it in front of you on every page, that $1 million equity built into the deal. And guys, again, I want to tell you that these properties are based on the NOI of the net operating income of the property. They are not based on the appraisal. So even if the appraisal comes $1 million, sometimes it's a marketing point. It's a marketing point because they think, everybody thinks like it's your own own house, that, oh, this is, it came, the appraisal came higher than what we are paying for, so it's a really good deal. But in multifamily, it's not like that. The reason is the multifamily properties are sold based on the cap rate and the net operating income, not the appraisal. So it's just to tell you that this appraisal came more than what we are buying is a, like a marketing tactic. Isn't that true, Prashant?
That is actually 100% true. I mean, you would never buy property based on appraisal. Appraisal is for the lender to make sure that the property, I mean, in this area, property will hold the value. That's what the lenders use for. But syndicators would never use appraisal to evaluate the value of the property. And they cannot. It just doesn't happen. Appraisals are typically done by lenders, you know, which is at a much later stage. We have already gone into the contract, and typically only the financial contingency is left. Everything else is done. So appraisal is like in the middle of before the closing, you know, like a month before the closing.
The next question you should be asking about their business plan on the deal, and their key actions and their timeline. They may be renovating the property, but they may take like 5 years to renovate the property. You want to know upfront whether they're going to be renovating the property in a year, 2 years, and if there is going to be any, and also you should be asking them what kind of loans they're getting, what kind of financing are they getting? Are they getting, I'm going to be talking about that later on as well, but as an investor, you want to know those things as well. So then what are the key functions, their plans, their routines to stay on the top of the apartment manager, whether they are going to be doing weekly calls, bi-weekly calls, monthly calls, and I have seen sometimes they don't do even quarterly call. I have seen syndicators, they don't even do quarterly calls. And those things are important. They just call as, so they basically they give the prop, buy the property, give it to the property manager to do whatever they want, and they start moving to another one to buy another property, raising more capital and buying another property. They don't look at the property they have bought already. So they don't do calls every week, asset management calls with the property manager, and they don't know what's going on the property for themselves. And if they make weekly calls, they'll definitely know how that is performing on the property is performing. Who is that? Who is the your staff on the property? Who is the leasing manager on the property? What is going in? Apartment number 103, and has this property been rented? What are the marketings the property management is doing? So you need to be on top of it. And the syndicator, the asset management, whoever is on top of this is definitely going to make more NOI. So do you factor in anticipated expense reduction into projections? So some of the syndicators use the broker's performer, which should be thrown away before they do their own due diligence, but some of them do. So, and a lot of times they're not meeting those performa, even if it's not the broker's performa, even if it's their own performa, they're not meeting. So if they're not meeting their performa, what's their resolution? What are they gonna do to do make sure that they meet the performa that they had set up in their underwriting?
So I have two questions here, Kishan.
Okay.
Is it acceptable for a sponsor that does not have a lot of upfront money to offer all or part of the acquisition fees as skin in the game?
Okay. I'll answer this question in a little bit.
Okay. The second question I have is what questions do you ask when deal performance is behind projections?
Okay. The first question I would ask, why is it? Whether it's there is low occupancy, whether they're getting traffic to the property, whether the property management is performing on budget, or sometimes there are unexpected expenses as well. And I can give you an example on one of our property. We bought this property last year and the gas pipeline burst, and since it had bursted twice before, the city wanted us to replace the whole pipeline, and it was a main pipeline and it costed us $50,000. So that was an unexpected unexpected expense that took our NOI down. So it could be carelessness of the property manager or asset manager, or even unexpected. There could be the best property management and the best asset management, but unexpected expenses. Sometimes the inspectors in the beginning didn't do a pretty good job, or the syndicators didn't do a pretty good job vetting the inspection of the property, etc. So those could be the reasons, and then you can ask what steps are they taking. If it's the management, are they changing the management? If it's the staff, are they changing the staff? And if it's an unexpected expense, then even they have to give you an answer, what is the reason and how they're dealing with it. Does that answer the question, Prashantji?
Yeah, to me, yes.
Okay.
But you know, if anybody has more question on that, they can ask.
Okay, and I will I'll answer the first question in a little bit.
Okay.
So, how do you plan to manage the cash flow? So once the property is under management and it's cash flowing, and how would it be managed? And that's most important. So, and of course, there's going to be preferred return, and there could not be. Normally, all my deals I have invested, and there is always a preferred return. But how would they manage that cash flow? You want to know that upfront as well. How often can I expect the distributions and financial reports? So you need to know what's going on the property. You're not just you're getting your preferred return, then you want to know how often are you going to get them, monthly or quarterly. And that makes the difference in the IRR. If you're getting monthly and as compared to quarterly, or if you are not getting for the first 2 years, and some of the business plans are like that, you don't get any of the distributions in the very first 2 years because they are repositioning the property. So you're just getting at the end, last 3 years. So that's going to make a difference in your IRR of that property. So, and also the financial reports. What financial report are you going to be getting? And how often are you going to be getting? I would say every month. You need to know every month, how is the property performing? What is the NOI on the property? And you should be getting all those. Or you could, a lot of syndicators these days have portals. So they upload those to the portal, and you can, whenever you get time, you can log into your portal and pull down and download the financial reports and look at on your own time, not just by email, just you can download from the portal as well. And also it should be ACH, but there are still some people sending their preferred returns through checks. So those could be delayed sometimes. You could miss it sometimes. It could be lost as well if you don't track them. So you want to make sure that those distributions are sent direct deposit to your account. And next, do you factor any anticipated expense reduction in the projection? So a lot of times you will see in their underwritings, there are expense reductions. So, but you want to make sure why those expense reductions are there. So how and what are they going to do to reduce those expense? Are they going to have less payroll? Are they going to have less maintenance? Are they going to fire one maintenance guy and keep just another? So you want to know what's going on and how are they going to do, and are they not going to spend money on the marketing? So basically, if they have a plan in reduction of the expenses, you need to know how they will do it. And it's a lot of time it's just writing in the OM that we're going to be running this property at 36%, which is normally not the case unless it's a property and a bigger property. Normally, the expense ratio is 50-50. So you want to know that as well. So what kind of offering is it? Is it a 506B or a 506C? If it's a 506C, only the accredited investors can invest in that deal. If it's a 506B, sophisticated investors can do that too. So what is the preferred return? And the waterfall splits. What kind of waterfall splits? And normally they don't mention those waterfall splits in the OMs. And are there any hurdles to meet? So this thing is very important. I'll give it 2-3 minutes on this. Preferred return on or off the capital. And Prashantji, recently you might have heard this, because a lot of syndicators are doing the preferred return off the capital because the investors are not reading the PPM and the operating agreements.
Okay.
So that means if they returned your $4,000 out of your $50,000, so your equity is reduced to $46,000 instead of $50,000. So this is very important that your preferred return should be on your initial investment. That's if you invested $100,000, till the end, you should have $100,000 basis in that deal, other than cost segregation, if you took those depreciation, et cetera. So your preferred return should be on the equity, not off the capital. So you should know about the sponsor fees involved in the deal. There's an acquisition fee. There is a sponsor fee. There is a refinancing fee. There is a sales fee. So you want to know all those deals up front. And all those fees are not listed on the OM either. So you want to know what are the sponsor fees on the deal. And you want to know the average return on the project, IRR on the project, the target equity multiple. And you also want to ask them a question which is not listed here. What were their returns in their previous deals? Are they performing on the performer? Are they paying all the preferred returns to their investors? So these are the things that are normally in the offering that are hidden. Not everybody knows all these things and they don't ask questions, especially the return on and off the capital. It's very important, and a lot of syndicators are hiding this in all those 100 pages.
There's a question here. Do you look at accrual and compounding?
Yes, this is an important question. Yeah, it's not mentioned in here. That needs to be looked at too.
Yeah, okay.
So some of the questions are duplicated. So, and we already discussed this, if the performance is below expectations, what are they going to do, or delays in the distributions or report issuance? You need to know what are the resolutions. What can you do to resolve those issues if you're not getting your preferred return on time, or you're not getting your reports on time, or you're not being communicated? So you want to know what is the resolution, who do I need to contact, and all that kind of stuff. So you can also ask this if they have a liquidity option. So let's say 2 years down the road, you need that money back for some reason, your personal reasons. Can you get that money back? Which is not an option on most of it, but some people, they do have these options as well. So, but you can check this clause if there is a buyout option clause in that PPM. And sometimes the sponsors buy you out. Sometimes they can have some other members buy you out. So you need to check that too. So did they do, you must ask this question as well, sensitivity analysis, and do they know what's their break-even occupancy? So at what occupancy are they going to break even? They're not going to be in profit or loss. Ask them if their underwriting they think is conservative, which most of them will say, but test it on your end as well, whether it is conservative or not. And there are several ways to test that sensitivity analysis. I don't have time to explain those things now. So maybe some other time we can do that. So ask if they had any failures. Ask if the sponsors had any failures before, and how did they resolve? How did they dealt with those failures? And if the sponsor is honest, they will definitely tell you those failures. If they had any failures and how did they resolve? If they are not very honest, and every real estate syndicator or investor will definitely have had their own share of failures. Nobody can say, I have always been successful, I had no problems. So that is the trustworthy question that they should be answering and telling you upfront if they had failures and how did they dealt with it. And last, not least, red flags that I would check before investing. So if they haven't had a successful syndication background, and none of those syndicators in the deal have had a track record, or they have been through the full cycle of the deal, and a lot of them haven't, believe me, because most of the syndicators have erupted between last 5 years. So make sure they have turned around some deals. They have had a track record of buying and selling the properties. And this is the number one red flag. Because sometimes the students, 4 or 5 students get together, none of them have experience. They have a mentor, and they are the ones doing deals. So that's a red flag. None of the key sponsors are full-time multifamily operators. So if they all have their second job, this is another red flag. So that means they have something else going on in their life. This is not a priority to them. So if one or two are full-time, that's fine too. But if none of them, that's why I have none of the key sponsors up front. And if there is only one partner in the deal, I said before also, if there is only one person, he signed the loan, he found the deal, he's raising the money, I would never invest in that deal either. I want at least a few people in the deal so that if something happens to one person, and a lot of time there are chances of being dishonest if there is only one person. There are less chances of being dishonest if there are like 3 or 4 partners. So if there is no preferred return to the passive investors on the deal, I just walk away from that deal as well. And last but not least, the question here's no skin in the game means no money in the deal. So if the sponsors have no money in the deal, and now I'm going to answer that question, Prashantji. If they want to just use the acquisition money, they can, but I would still want them to invest some of their money, $50,000, $100,000 at least, in the deal so that they have a skin in the game. And they feel that they don't just play with other people's money straight. I want them to have, they can add their acquisition fee as well, but not just the acquisition fee. Very good. They should have some skin in the game, mm-hmm. depending on the size of the deal at least 50,000 equal to you, what you are investing, they should be investing in the deal as well.
Yep. There's a basic question here. What is preferred return?
Okay, preferred return is the return that the investors will get before the key sponsors get any money at all. And I can give you an example. So let's say there is a NOI. I'll give you a simple example. There are 10 members with a 100,000 deal and they have a 8% preferred return and the NOI of the property is 100,000. So each of the investors, passive investors, will get their share of 8% first before the sponsors get any money. And then after that, they get a split of 70-30 or 80-20, whatever is written in the OM.
Yeah, basically investors' money has the priority.
Priority.
So any income that property produces, first a return on investors' money is given, and then remaining money is distributed to other folks on the project. So that is called preferred return. If property makes only $80 and all $80 is to be distributed, then others will not make any money. So that's what the preferred return means. How do you suggest getting experience as a syndicator?
First is to work for a syndicator. That means you get the whole experience if you can. If not, then work for us. If you can't afford to lose your existing job or existing business, you still want to learn, then align with some syndicator and try helping them for free. Spend an hour or 2 hours with them for free for sometime 6 months, 3 months, whatever you can do. Or you can just get on some Facebook group, buy some books, get on podcasts, listen to podcasts. That's another way of learning the syndication business. Get to some boot camps, get some education. That's another way of doing it. But the best is to practically do it rather than just reading it on the books or talking to other people or listening to podcasts.
Yeah, so I will just give an example here. I can learn all about swimming. Right? I can read the books for a year. I can listen to all the podcasts about swimming, but I will not know anything about swimming unless I jump into water. Right? So the best thing what KK is saying is the best way to learn is hands-on experience. How you get that hands-on experience is your relationship with a syndicator. If you can work for somebody, that is well and good, or offer your free help. Just do it for others for free. And trust me, there are a lot of people in the world who are willing to take your free help and teach you, and teach you basically syndication business. And that's how I had learned it. I did the, most difficult deal. I never had paid any money to any mentor or anybody. I did the most difficult deal for a syndicator, and I was working, for three to six months. And after that, I had so much experience, I could even write a book on syndication. I knew everything, bridge loan, conforming loans, general contractor, property management, what to look for in the property, how much time should it take, EMD, soups to nut, everything, I learned in that. And it was a free service and they took it. And, I learned the most.
So guys, same thing here. Just as I went through these questions, unless you go and ask for yourself, unless you go and get some OM from some syndicator, put these questions in front of you, ask them. And that way you will have a lot more experience than just listening to this webcast today.
Yeah, so as I was saying, these seem like common questions.
Yeah.
But they are not common because you don't know what to ask.
Yep.
Right? You have to almost memorize them to make sure you understand even the answer.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you for taking the time to be here on this meetup today, and appreciate. And I also appreciate Prashant for having me here in front of this great audience. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Kishanji, for again. I'm sure you know we'll be doing a couple of these more in future. But thank you so much for your time, also.